All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband.
Alright. Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN on a Monday morning. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving and a lovely holiday weekend. We are back for our Monday morning show. Hey, our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also text us, same number, 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, and it's constantly updated, is Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us. We have over 11,600 fans on our Facebook page. It's a great way to contribute to the show, to converse with other listeners, and to just keep track of what's happening on the show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Also, you can check us out with podcasts, which is one of the best ways to check us out. I know a lot of people can't stay up between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. every weekday morning when I'm on. So the podcast is a great way to do that, and you can subscribe to it at iTunes. Go to iTunes.com, subscribe. It's free. It'll automatically show up into your device. You can listen at your leisure, bro, anytime you want. So check it out at WGNradio.com as well. Okay, we're back. And coming up, it's Monday morning, which means we'll have the Monday morning movie reviews. That will be coming up in just a couple of minutes. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, and I review the movies every Monday morning. And my dad's joke, it's Monday, so it's a jokey time. So my dad's joke will be coming up, and that'll be in the 4:45-ish break. So, and we're going to talk about is it the golden age of television now? Now, we've heard that a lot of people have referred to the golden age of television. Every couple of decades, somebody says that was the golden age of television, or this is the golden age of television. A lot of people seem to think that we're in the golden age of television right now, considering there's so much of it, considering there are so many different ways of watching it, and considering that a lot of it is really good. Like, there's a lot of very good television, a lot of extraordinarily talented people, writers, directors, actors, and actresses have seen and have shown that, in fact, television is a great way to express themselves in a quality way. So we're going to talk about TV, just to have a fun conversation about TV. What was the golden age of television? Is it now? What do you watch now? What are the arguments, pro and con? And we'll talk about that. Our phone number again is 312-981-7200. Dan Shugrue will be back on Wednesday morning. So he's taking the next couple of mornings off. And Yun, my producer, is currently doing a lot of work right now. But we'll say hello to him. He's running around. But when he gets back to the mic, we will say hello to him officially, and he can introduce himself. And in the newsroom is Esmeralda Leon. Hello, Esmeralda.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
How was your Thanksgivings?
Yeah. They were good.
Yeah?
They were good. Went home, saw the family.
Did you eat?
Then promptly left. Yeah. Yes, I did.
Wait a minute. And then promptly left.
You know, there's only so much I can take nowadays.
Yeah.
So.
Do they listen?
No.
Okay, good.
No, they're all sleeping.
I just was going to say, I you know.
No, I love my family.
I know you do.
But, yeah. I only want to be there for a few hours nowadays.
Did you do the traditional stuff, the turkey?
No. No, my parents don't really like turkey.
Okay.
So these past few years, I've tried to do something different. And this year it was lamb.
Ooh.
Yeah, I did a boneless leg of lamb.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was pretty tasty.
I love lamb.
It was, I'm not a big lamb person, but I saw this recipe on America's Test Kitchen, because I'm 80 years old, and that's all I watch. And it looked delicious, so I tried it out, and it was really good.
It worked out.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I enjoy all portions of the lamb.
Yeah, it was a nice roast.
And a leg of lamb is good. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was nice.
Oh, that's
cool. It's a fancy piece of meat. So that's what
what?
I just
now,
assumed.
You know, we haven't done Straight Out of Context in a couple of weeks, but you just said it was a fancy piece of meat, and I'm guessing that people are jotting down the time and the day.
Maybe they'll jot down your time since you repeated it.
I don't know. Who knows?
They'll probably use
it. Who knows? It's actually more fun when a woman says gigantic piece of meat than when a man's. Well, maybe not. It's just as fun both ways, actually.
Oh boy.
Well, welcome back.
Yeah, you as well.
Yeah. Now you're off tomorrow. What the hell?
I am. I just took a day off. I got some days to
that you have to
get rid of.
That you have to burn before the end of the year. I know what you're talking about.
And nothing like taking a Monday off.
All right, you'll be taking.
Well, it's a Tuesday technically. For
Tuesday
me.
Morning, you'll be taking off.
Yes.
And you're actually taking off a couple of Tuesday mornings.
Yes.
Over the next couple of weeks.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So we're gonna miss you tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
I know you will. Doesn't mean I'm not going to miss you.
Oh.
Dan Shagrew will be back on Wednesday. And let's say hello to my breathless producer for the evening. Why don't you introduce yourself to everybody? Are you okay, man? Hold on. Are you all right? No, you got to hit. I don't know what button to hit.
Yeah, I'm good.
There you go. You okay, man?
Yeah.
Is everything cool? Yeah.
Was he just doing the producer Olympics
that we
make him do?
Well, you know how tough I am on my producers, Esmeralda. You know how difficult I am to work with.
Yeah, you have a whip back there.
I
that
know.
You just
it's really hard to work with. Are we all set? Are we all good?
We're good.
Okay, cool, yep. Man. All right, cool. Well, introduce yourself to everybody. Let them know who you are.
Guys, I'm Yon Tai Suzuki, and I'm filling in for Dan Shagrew, good friend of mine, good guy. But generally, you can hear me and hear my other host, which is Steve Bertrand. And I'm just going to throw this plug in real quick on WGN's Wintrust Business Lunch.
There you go.
I'll be here till about 1 because I got to produce him after this.
Oh, that's a long day.
It is.
Thanks. I appreciate it, man. No, seriously. I appreciate you doing this. I really do.
I liked your movies list. And then especially your holiday favorites. So,
yeah. Okay, cool, man. All right, cool. Well, that's Yon, and he's with us, and he's been working hard already. And, God, he's going to be here till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, man. Get some rest. Can you sleep, like, on Bertrand's couch? Does Bertrand have a couch? I don't think Bertrand has a couch, does he?
He doesn't have a couch, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go catch Creed after I'm done.
There you go, and you'll hear our review coming up. Yeah, our review is going to be coming up. Okay, well, that's Yon. He's in the he's producing. We're going to take a break when we come back. In fact, you will hear our review of Creed and other movies and box office with Colin and Eric. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here, and it is a Monday morning, and we are here in the Allstate studio live on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower here until 5 a.m., and then I'll hang out with Steve Cochran and the gang for the first hour of the Monday morning show, wrapping up what happened on the weekend. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for the people who worked for us while we were away for the holiday, but we are back. And my dad will be back later on to tell a joke because it's a jokey time, and that's how that works. And much more coming up right here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can talk and text us there, 312-981-7200. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show, which is, in fact, the best way to stay connected to us, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us there. Every Monday morning, we do the Monday morning movie reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. We were preempted last week because I was off Monday morning. I took a couple of extra days off for the holidays. So I was off last Monday, so we didn't do the Monday morning movie reviews. We have a couple of movies to catch up on, and then all the new ones for this week. And then Eric Childress and I, after Colin is cut loose because he's got to, you know, teach the children in the morning, we will discuss the box office winners and losers. But let's get the guys back on. Here's Eric Childress. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Did you have a lovely Thanksgiving?
Lovely.
All
very
right.
Nice.
Very nice. Very nice. I believe, Colin, you and I both watched Home for the Holidays on Thanksgiving Eve.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
We didn't even consult one another. That's just how we roll.
Not at all. I fell on that movie this year. It's usually either Planes, Trains, Pieces of April, or Home for the Holidays, and it fell on that this year.
Yeah, so. I did Home for the Holidays as well. I'm not a big Planes, Trains, Automobiles guy. I know it's, you know, that's sacrilege, but I'm not a big Planes, Trains, Automobile guy. But I love Pieces of April, but I didn't feel like sobbing uncontrollably.
Yeah, you do have to set aside.
Because
time,
that
yeah.
movie makes me sob uncontrollably. So,
see, that's why I didn't watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I see. No, that's legit, man. People love that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, people really yep. have an emotional attachment to that movie, and it's nice to have one of those movies that you can watch yearly that you know what you're going to get out of it when you see it.
Yes,
so,
right.
Just like at Christmas, man, I watch both Die Hards. There's just no question. Well, both. There's been
right.
more, but the two that count.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and of course, Gremlins. And I watch the traditional stuff, like Black Christmas, the original.
Sure.
And hey, man, I don't know, but I'm kind of excited about the Krampus.
Are you?
I am. I'm disappointed it's PG-13.
Yeah.
But I liked Trick or Treat. I liked this guy's Halloween horror movie. And I really liked the cast. And I like, you know, here's the deal. Nobody's going to make, what was the name of that, God, why am I blanking on that Norwegian, the Swedish film?
Rare Exports.
Which one? Rare Exports. No one's going to make a better, cool, crazier Christmas movie than that.
Nope.
In that regard. But I like this, man. I think it's, the cast is great, and there's a monster killing people on Christmas. That's all right, in my
opinion. Well, we don't have a screening of it, so.
Yeah, I know, but I'm going. That's the one, next weekend, that's the movie on Saturday that I'm taking my parents to.
Nice.
We're going to go see Krampus.
So, I'll see it, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hey, by the way, are either of you guys coming out Tuesday night to my screening of Nutty Professor?
I don't think I can make it.
Colin?
No?
No,
I can't do it.
Oh,
nope.
Man. All right.
Sorry.
Well, anybody, please come on out. Nutty Professor. It's our 50th movie and our fourth anniversary for the Nick DiGilio Film Club, and I really would love a nice big crowd for a hilarious movie, one of the classics of comedy. Jerry Lewis, one of my favorite people on the planet, and I love that a Jerry Lewis movie is my 50th movie celebrating the fourth anniversary. So it's going to be fun. Only $10 to get in. Have some dinner. Come on out. It's a cheap night. It's going to be fun. It's also, you know, in all of its technicolor glory on the big screen. And that's Tuesday night, this Tuesday night, December 1st. Go to MovieCode.com. Reserve your seats right now. And let's pack the place. Bring the whole family. It's a family movie. So it's MovieCode.com, MUVICO. Unlike the last month's film, which was Goodfellas, not much of a family film.
Well, it was a different kind of family.
Yeah. So. Ah, there you go. Wait a minute now. All right. Okay, listen, we were off last week. The big one that came out last week and also was number one at the box office this week is the wrap-up of The Hunger Games. Very quickly, let's get each of your assessments of it, Eric.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I've been a fan since the beginning of the series, and I think it concluded, from what I understand, pretty much just like the book, and I'm okay with that. I think that... we've had Harry Potter and Twilight split their final movies in two, and this is sort of the one. This one, I think, particularly what I liked about it was that it actually felt like its own movie. Like, it didn't just feel like they were wrapping up stuff that they set up in part three. It seemed like a wrap up of just everything. And Jennifer Lawrence is extraordinary in it. I think they did a really great job with this series, and I think it's about a lot more than just sort of revenge and, you know, comeuppances and whatnot. I think there's a lot of interesting things going on in this series, mm-hmm. I'm very happy with how it resolved.
Okay, Colin?
Yeah, I echo all of that, and I particularly also like the way the movie was shot. I think its cinematography was noteworthy. Like Eric said, you know, it's kind of nice that it doesn't, you know, the ending isn't all about just getting the good guy and the bad guy or good girl, whatever, in the same room and having them, you know, sort of, you know, whet the appetite of, you know, the audience's, you know, bloodlust. But it's actually about, you know, something a little more meaningful and a little more interesting. And it's got to be said, you know, there's a scene towards the end where, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman should have been there and he's not there. And yeah. You kind of feel that. It's pretty sad, but and it's still sad to see him up on the screen when he shows up. They're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's been 2 years now and, you know, still miss him. I think this is a very satisfying conclusion to what has been ultimately one of the most satisfying and really interesting franchises that we've had.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the first one at all, actually. But everyone since then I've liked, and I like this one. I like that it wrapped it up well. You know, the thing I think that separates this from, well, Twilight's not even mentionable in these with this material because
right.
It's so much better. But the Harry Potter movies and things like that, I don't know. There's something about the Harry Potter movies and these movies that the filmmaking is great, and it doesn't. You know, it's not lazy. It's like really good filmmaking. And obviously the cast is extraordinary. Like, I mean, the acting and the Woody Harrelson is great in these movies. I mean, everybody is really good. But like Woody Harrelson to me is like, man, you look at Woody Harrelson, who's a guy I really like, and look at like some of the stuff he's done. This ranks up there at like, you know, maybe the best, some of the best performances he's ever given are in these movies. So I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was good. I haven't gone crazy over it, but I like it. So all right. What about what did you guys think of The Night Before, Colin?
You know, this is a case of, you know, where however much you laugh will, you know, is pretty much takes everything. And I noticed I laughed enough during this movie. I thought it was funny. But you know, in the days since seeing it, I've kind of just haven't really thought about anything particular that made me laugh out loud more than anything else. Maybe the Michael Shannon stuff, especially the last shot of Michael Shannon in the movie. You know, on the whole though, I mean, as a movie, I don't think it really holds together. I think it's kind of just a little on the lazy side story wise for, you know, these guys, Seth Rogen and all them. I'm sort of in the middle on it. You know, it's kind of a 2.5-3 if I'm generous star movie that I think, you know, there's other better choices out there from these guys. You know, 50/50 is a better movie, Pineapple Express, This Is the End, but I do think it's much better than last year's offering, The Interview, which I thought was terrible.
Okay.
I'm kind of, it's okay. It's got funny moments. I'm kind of indifferent towards it, though.
All right. Eric?
Yeah, I'm a little more generous towards it. I certainly laughed enough to give it a recommendation. I think that when the movie sort of falls back on some slapsticky and a couple gross out moments in the film, I think those moments sort of, you know, kind of shut you up a little bit. But there are plenty of moments with the cast, individual moments that they have that I think are really funny. Colin's right. It's definitely slight. It doesn't, you know, really have the sort of the real genuineness of a 50/50 when it tries to be a little bit more dramatic at times. It doesn't quite live up to what it probably could have been. But at the same time, it's not necessarily bad either. I personally kind of enjoyed the fact that Seth Rogen was basically high for just about the entire movie. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt is just a delight on screen, and more just welcome, you know, anything he's in. So it's not great. All those other movies that Colin mentioned, they're certainly better. It is better than The Interview. So, you know, slight recommendation, but a recommendation nevertheless.
Yeah, I'm not recommending it. I'm done with these guys. I've had it. If Seth Rogen and his cohorts never make another movie, I'll be a very happy man. I didn't hate this movie. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, because I thought it was going to be maybe one of the worst movies ever. So, you know, my expectations were low. And again, like you mentioned, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is incapable of being unlikable.
And it's got a good cast, some surprise cameos that are kind of funny. I laughed a couple of times, but it did nothing for me. It did nothing. All right, so those are the big ones that came out last week. We'll take a break. When we come back, we got some big ones to talk about this week and the box office a little bit later on. Everybody hang on, okay? There's Colin. Yep. There's Eric. They're hanging on. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com. More coming up right after we break on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is Monday morning. That means my dad will tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And it's Monday morning movie reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com. We talked a little bit about The Hunger Games and The Night Before, which were the big ones that came out last week. The Hunger Games, all three of us are recommending. Night Before, Colin is in the middle, not so crazy about it. Eric is recommending it. He's recommending it. He doesn't think it's great, and I don't like it. So let's get back to the movies. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Yep. Now, did either of you see Entertainment?
Yes, I did.
Colin? Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's start with that one, because that wasn't on the list, but it opened up at the Music Box. And it is.
Oh, okay.
It's at the Music. It opened up at the Music Box this past week.
Right.
And it is also on, I believe, on the VOD.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see. Eric, why don't you take a crack at this?
Oh, God. Okay.
Unless you want me to.
Why don't you take a stab at it?
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Entertainment is this new film that stars, wait a second, I don't know his real name.
Exactly.
Oh, Glenn Turkington is his real name. Okay. And he plays... He in real life, he has this stand-up comedian character that he does called Neil Hamburger. He's been doing this character for, 15 years at least. And he's this really sort of like creepy-looking, frumpy, greasy-haired, comb-over, glasses-wearing weirdo who tells really weird jokes, has a very strange delivery, is full of phlegm, always has at least two drinks cupped into his arm while he's drinking, and he tells really weird one-liners. Now, I have seen Neil Hamburger, and I think Neil Hamburger is funny. I think it's a really weird and funny character. The question is, can you make a 105-minute movie following this character, and how do you do that? The creator of this character, like I said, is Greg Turkington. He also plays the character. And he, along with Rick Alverson and another guy, the guy who was in the comedy, which Rick Alverson also directed, decided to follow this character around and create this world around him that is as unlikable and as sort of creepy and weird and dark as the character is times 10. And it just seems like the world that this character inhabits with each scene sucks the life out of this character with each scene that happens. The movie dabbles in surrealism, very dark, very strange, at times funny. Ultimately, it's a test of patience, which I believe you guys will probably agree with me on this. It is ultimately a test of patience. You kind of have to be into what this Rick Alverson guy does. I finally got around to seeing the comedy. I remember, I think, Colin, I believe you reviewed it, or Eric, did you guys both review it?
I saw it at Sundance.
You saw it at Sundance. So, Eric,
yeah.
you reviewed it. And you were, what, were you mixed on it, right?
Hated it.
Oh, you hated it. Okay.
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, God, I can't wait to hear what you think of this one. I finally caught up with the comedy. And in theory, I like it. In practice, not so much. Same thing with this movie. I think that this Rick Alverson guy is a a pretty monumentally pretentious filmmaker. I think he watched a bunch of David Lynch and thinks he's David Lynch. I don't think he can shoot or frame like David Lynch, although he thinks he can. I don't think that he can build mood like David Lynch or American surrealists that he is clearly influenced by. However, there are ideas in this movie that I really like, and there are certain moments in this movie that I found kind of shockingly entertaining. There's a birth sequence in this movie that I don't know whether it's a real thing or whether it's imagined, which is another thing about this movie that's not really clear, whether this really is happening to this guy, this guy who is only referred to as the comedian, although they do call him Neil in the film. And like, does he really have a teenage daughter that he's calling at home? I don't think so. I think none of this stuff is really happening. But, you know, that's for any kind of analysis. Dean Stockwell shows up in it and doesn't have a line of dialogue. There are cameos by John C. Reilly is in this movie. Ty Sheridan, I think, is terrific in this movie, by the way, as his weird clown opening act. It is a movie that one of the things I like about the movie is that I think in some ways it's a very accurate portrayal in a very surrealistic way, a very accurate portrayal of what it's like to be a traveling comedian playing really crappy gigs. It's that times 50. I am not recommending it because it's a test of endurance. I almost didn't make it through it. But there are things in it that I liked. But overall, I think Rick Alverson is a very pretentious filmmaker, and he thinks he's a lot smarter than he really is ultimately what I think. But Neil Hamburger, like his act, I like it. I just didn't like the movie. So in real life, I think Neil Hamburger, when he does his stuff, is funny. Colin, let's start with you.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with your review. It's it is test of patience. I mean, it wants to be David Lynch's Road Hard, but
that's a great way of putting it, man. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, yeah, it's surrealist, but he doesn't know what to do with surrealism except point the camera at something and have it be silent or have wind noise go through it, and right. That's your scene.
Or a weird cello score. That builds up, which I got really tired of quick.
Yeah, you got to have more than that. And, you know, I've never seen this comedian before. This was my introduction to him. And I was like, okay, I've seen Tony Clifton before. Thanks.
Right. Let me just say this, Colin. If you haven't seen Neil Hamburger. Now, Eric, have you ever seen Neil Hamburger's real act?
No.
Okay. It's not what it is in the movie. It's not that. I mean, he's abrasive and weird, but his material is actually funny in real life.
Well, there was one joke that I remember, or at least the setup of the joke. I remember when he set the joke up, I was like, oh, that is actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I can't remember it now, but...
No, but his material is much... It's less abrasive and nasty and unfunny as it is in the movie, and I think that's done on purpose.
Yeah.
And I think that's done on purpose for Neil Hamburger fans who see the movie and go, what the hell is this?
Right. So,
all right, go ahead. I'm sorry, Colin. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't have much more to add to your review than I pretty much agree with it. This is a test of patience. Even if you like the movie, you shouldn't recommend it to people unless you tell them that they might absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
I don't absolutely hate it. There are things I like about it in theory, but there's a lot more that I don't. So yeah, not recommend.
Okay, Eric.
Yeah.
Well, it's better than the comedy. I'll give it that much, and that's basically because I think I laughed at maybe two or three of the jokes.
Yeah.
Even though this movie played at Sundance, and a couple of the guys in our Chicago sponsored cabin has got to see the movie, and they were repeating those jokes like all week. Also, all week, all I was hearing in the cabin was legendary.
Yeah.
That's all I was hearing all week in the cabin. But I heard the joke, and yet I heard him again, and I laughed again.
Yeah.
But that's about all that I had to recommend to say anything positive about this movie. I mean, as far as like weirdo, like you know. Things about short films about, you know, life on the road of a comedian. One of the final episodes of the last season of Louie, where he has to room with with the one guy.
Is
anything in that episode is more brilliant than anything in the entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've ever seen Rick Alverson do interviews for the comedy or entertainment, everything you say about him is absolutely true.
Yeah.
I mean, he sort of...
his movies take on his personality, and those are personalities that I don't want to be stuck with for 105 minutes.
He's an incredibly pompous filmmaker. There's no question about it. But he stumbles upon some things that I think are kind of interesting, that some ideas that are kind of interesting. And you can't help but have some moments that are good considering some of the talent that wants to be involved with this guy. I mean, like, he really wrangles some good talent. Jack Black is a producer on this movie. And you know, like, he's friends with those Tim and Eric idiots who
he's the guy who started in the comedy.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But he's friends with those guys. And how many unbelievable people get involved with those two guys?
I know.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. But anyway, the delivery of Neil Hamburger in the movie is accurate. The material, however, is not. There are a lot. It's you got to see the act. You know, they put him in a different light in this movie. Ultimately we're not recommending it. So ultimately it's just so weird, but it's really weird to see, you know, I didn't see the Boy Scout zombie movie, but for me, this is an insanely weird follow-up knowing Ty Sheridan's like history as an actor and the choices that he makes, it makes sense that he would do this movie. But it just seems to me that had I seen the zombie movie, I would have had an even weirder time watching Ty Sheridan, you know, fake defecate on stage as a clown. I don't know. So, all right, hang on, everybody. We'll get to some movies that normal humans will like. coming up next, it's the morning movie review, the Monday morning movie reviews. Nick DiGilio, Eric Childress, Colin Suter, and we'll come back with more on 720 WGN. Yeah, man, yeah. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Monday morning. And that means my dad tells a joke later on, my dad, Nick. It's a jokey time. And it also means, because it's Monday morning, that Eric and Colin from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and Movies.com join me to talk about the new movies. And here's Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's go here, shall we? Let's go, Kyle. Now, Eric, you didn't see Legend.
No.
Wow. Okay.
Legendary.
Carrot Top. Okay. What's the difference between the American flag and Courtney Love? All right. We're not going to do the punchline.
No.
But okay. Now we're quoting entertainment. What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
All right. Legend.
Why?
Colin, tell us about Legend.
Why?
And, and it's also not. By the way, let's not get it confused with that piece of crap that Ridley Scott made about 30 years ago.
Which maybe that'll make it more fun.
Which Rob Bottin's makeup and Tim Curry's performance in that movie are still great. That's the only thing I'm going to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Well, this tells the story of the craze, which was portrayed in a film 25 years ago called The Craze.
And that's K-A-K-A-K-R-A-Y-S.
Yep.
Now, let me ask you this, Colin.
Yeah.
Do you remember who one of the guys was who played The Craze?
Wasn't one of or both of them from Spandau Ballet?
One of them was from Spandau Ballet, yeah.
Okay.
That just cracks me up. I'm sorry. That's a little piece of trivia that just cracks me up. I don't know.
Right. I thought both of them were, but okay.
Maybe both of them are. Okay, I don't remember. I didn't like that one either. So go ahead.
So Ronald and Reggie Cray, they were twin brothers in 1960s England, east side of London, who were essentially the most feared crime lords at that time. They were like Al Capone times two. Both had a violent streak, Ronnie more so than Reggie. He was institutionalized and deemed schizophrenic, and he's also gay. Reggie was more about the business side of things, and he ran a nightclub, but was not above making threats that he and his brother would, you know, gleefully carry out in the most violent manner. Both are played this time by Tom Hardy. And the film focuses more on Reggie and his relationship with his wife, played by Emily Browning, who also narrates the film. So the movie is basically just about their reign over London and everybody's fear of them. And narratively speaking, I think this movie is a big mess. It's told from the point of view of Francis, who isn't in that many scenes. When it's explained why she narrates at the end, it still doesn't work. And I just think the movie just has really nothing to say about these guys at all. It wants to be Goodfellas. It tries for the style of Goodfellas. It tries for that fast-paced, you know, style of storytelling, and it takes a lot of pleasure in the crime and violent element of it. You know, cranking up whatever, you know, Frankie Valli song or whatever is playing, you know, when things get really violent, and, you know, just trying to do the Scorsese thing. But this is Brian Helgeland. This is the director of Knight's Tale and The Order. I think that's right.
He also did Payback. So I just wanted to mention that because really like that movie. So.
All right. And he wrote L.A. Confidential. Yeah. Well, I mean, the guy's not.
Yeah, but he's been riding that one for a long time.
Yeah, that he has. Yeah. And you can tell right here that he's out of steam in that regard as well. So this is, you know, I guess it's a showcase for Tom Hardy. You know, he's good in it. You know, he's playing two roles. One's a little showier than the other. As a whole, the movie doesn't really hold together, doesn't really teach me anything except that these guys were violent and feared, and there's really not much more to say about it than that.
Yeah.
So, not recommending it.
I'm with you. But I am recommending it because of Tom Hardy. I just think Tom Hardy's great at it. You know, he's having a blast, and it's so much fun to watch him. What a year, man, for this guy. I mean, come on. And The Revenant hasn't even come out yet, for God's sake. So, I mean, great year so far for Tom Hardy. And, you know, what are the odds that this guy, is there talk that he might get nominated for this?
I'm sure someone probably thinks so, yeah. But I don't think he has a chance.
It's the thing about it is, if, you know, he was ready for a good movie. You know what I mean? Like, he showed up. It was like, to me, it reminded me a little bit like how I felt about Chaplin, because Robert Downey Jr. Showed up. You know, he showed up. He was prepared, and he did great. Movie wasn't good. Same thing here. Like, Tom Hardy shows up, two distinctly different performances, you know, playing twins, and they do a nice job with the effects, you know, having them in the same frame and all that stuff.
They do.
It's great to watch Tom Hardy work. I happen to have like a massive crush on Emily Browning, so there's that. But I mean, the movie is like you said, Colin. It's just like Hegeland just watched Goodfellas a bunch of times, and was like, okay, well, this is clearly how you make a gangster movie. And it also, unlike Goodfellas, which runs 2 hours and like 40 minutes, this runs about 2:12, and it feels like it's 3 hours. It does like kind of have every gangster cliche that you can possibly imagine. The only time the movie really comes to life is when Tom Hardy is on screen, and luckily Tom Hardy is on screen pretty much the entire movie. So he's a lot of fun to watch, and it's a deeply flawed movie. It's not very good, not very well directed. But this is one of those times when, I mean, if you miss it, you miss it. That's fine. You can watch it on DVD. But I really would recommend that people get a chance to see Tom Hardy giving these two performances, because they're great. They're really great performances. So on that basis alone, and that basis absolutely alone, that's why I'm recommending it. Now, let me ask you guys this really quickly. Actors or actresses who have played twins in movies before. Now, for me, obviously, the gold standard is Jeremy Irons.
Yeah.
In Dead Ringers. Nobody has even come close. Tom Hardy's great in this movie, but nobody. Well, also the fact that Dead Ringers is also a great film. But I mean, that's the gold standard. Would you guys agree with that?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I enjoyed the Lohan very much in the Parent Trap. And I liked Haley Mills too, but only because I was like seven and I loved her when I was seven.
Mm-hmm.
But has there been a lot? I mean, what are the other ones where the actors have played these parts? Multiplicity. Well, that's not
not really twins.
Not really twins, but they're like 27 Michael Keatons in that movie.
Right.
What are some of the other ones? Do we know? Like, do you remember some other ones where people played the same role or like a bunch of different roles?
That trying to think of the ones who have played twins before.
Oh, wait a minute. Big Business.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a funny movie, man. When was the last time you guys saw Big Business?
It's been a while.
Probably when it came out.
That's a funny movie. You know who steals that movie? You know who steals it?
Yeah.
Fred Ward.
Yeah, I'll come right down there after I finish my Pop-Tart.
How about Nicolas Cage in Adaptation?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, that's something to think about. Think about that while we break here.
Okay.
All right.
Think about maybe there are, but I'm recommending Legend only because Tom Hardy is great in it. And if you haven't seen Dead Ringers, it's a great family film for the holidays. And also, by the way, Colin, you know this, it's a great first date movie.
Yeah.
All right, guys, hang on. Okay. We got other movies to talk about, but we also have the news, which is coming up, and we will do the news coming up in just a couple of seconds here. And then afterwards, it's more movies and the big ones that came out this week. And Eric and I will talk about the box office right here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower, and it is Monday morning, which means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews, because that's what we do on Monday morning. And because it's Monday morning, it's also time for my dad's joke. My dad will call in around the 4:45-ish break, and he'll tell you a joke, because it's a jokey time. All right, let's get back to the movie reviews. We got some big ones to talk about, box office analysis as well. We do it every Monday morning. By the way, if you miss our show at any time, you can always check us out on the podcasts. I highly recommend that. You can listen to it anytime you want at your leisure, bro. Really easy to do. Go to iTunes and find the Nick DiGilio Show. Subscribe for free, and it'll automatically show up into your device. You can listen at your leisure, bro, anytime. Tons of people listen that way. And go to WGNradio.com for podcast information, and you can listen to us there. Eric and Colin, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, Colin, you did not see Victor Frankenstein, correct?
Nope, did not see it.
Okay, Eric, tell us about Victor Frankenstein.
Okay, well, this is a new revisionist retelling of the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein tale. It stars, Daniel Radcliffe as Igor, who, as we meet in the film, is a circus performer with a really horrible hunchback who just happens to dabble in the art of science and basically knows as much as Dr. Frankenstein does. And Dr. Frankenstein is played by James McAvoy, who is, if you ever wanted to see what like Victor Frankenstein was like on cocaine, that's what James McAvoy is basically playing in this film. So he rescues Igor from the circus, mainly because of his extensive knowledge, and adopts him as a partner in his quest to basically reanimate dead tissue into living tissue. And the experiments that he's working on, he's got a monkey he's working on. And then you have the inspector out there believes that he knows of body parts that are being stolen around the place. This is really like the easiest case for this guy to ever solve. Like, everyone knows that Victor Frankenstein is basically stealing all this stuff, but it takes the inspector half the movie to figure it out himself. And he thinks that what he's doing is, obviously the work of Satan. He is very, very noble Christian man and whatnot. And, so if you're looking for for a retelling of the Frankenstein legend where you have to wait the entire movie to actually get to the Frankenstein monster, well, this is your movie. And if you wanted to wait that long and basically have Victor Frankenstein and Igor go mano a mano with the Frankenstein monster and then the movie ends, this is your movie. If that's not what you want out of the Frankenstein legend, then this movie definitely isn't for you. And I really don't know who this movie is for. A lot of movies these days are trying to do these revisionist, takes on old legends and whatnot. But this feels like really bad fan fiction. It was written by Max Landis, who did Chronicle and American Ultra earlier this year. And there's just something very incomplete about everything that's going on. It actually feels more like a fan fiction version of a prelude to Young Frankenstein more than Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. There's even a Frankenstein reference in the film. That's one of the slightly more amusing elements when the movie is slightly interesting during the first 20 or so minutes. After that, it actually becomes more of like Reanimator than the Frankenstein story. I know, those films have a lot in common, obviously, but this film doesn't have the sort of the allegory of Victor Frankenstein, nor does it have the sort of the blatant fun and bloodletting of Reanimator. So it's stuck in this limbo wasteland where everyone is really pretty wasted after kind of an energetic 15 minutes, even though there's a escape sequence at a circus that is so poorly staged and edited that I couldn't believe what I was watching. It ultimately just becomes very boring and very nondescript. And by the end of it, when, just facing off against the Frankenstein monster and like, this is what we waited for, no thank you to Victor Frankenstein.
Okay. I'm not recommending it either, but I don't think I disliked it as much as you did. The way that you're asking who this is for, I think the studio thinks it's for the people that enjoyed Guy Ritchie's version of Sherlock Holmes.
You're absolutely right, Nick.
Because that's exactly what it is.
That's what I thought of.
It's exactly what it is. It's like if Guy Ritchie had taken on Victor Frankenstein, he would do it like this. But I think this is a better made film than a Guy Ritchie movie. And I'll tell you why. There are certain things in it that I liked. I thought the special effects were really good. I don't know how much they spent on this movie, but it looks great. I don't see this movie as being like they didn't go nuts on the budget, did they?
No, I think it's in like the $40 million range.
It looks a lot better than that, man. I mean, this is a really beautifully looking movie, and the effects are great. I mean, that monkey thing, it looks awesome. And I think that even though there's not much of the monster, I thought the monster was great. Like the design was great. I thought the effects to bring the monster alive were really cool. It looked like they spent a ton of money on this movie. And I knew that they hadn't, judging by the fact that they think the box office draw is James McAvoy.
Right.
And I'm the only one. I happen to be the president of the James McAvoy fan club. And I love him in this movie. And you're absolutely right. It is like Victor Frankenstein on coke. There's no question about it. But I loved watching him. There's a scene where they're at like a dinner, like a fancy dinner. And he's talking about how they don't need women to create babies.
Well, he's drunk.
He's hilarious. He's hilarious in that scene.
And
I think like McAvoy is one of those guys. I think McAvoy is an enormously talented actor. And I would pretty much watch him in anything. And this is pretty much anything. And it's fun to watch Daniel Radcliffe. I think he does a nice job physically in this movie. There's some really nice stuff that he does. It's absolutely ridiculous how he becomes not a hunchback.
It's
completely absurd. And this whole movie is completely absurd. But I got to say that there were things in it that I enjoyed. I thought the effects were great. I loved watching McAvoy. But, yeah, you're right. Like that sequence where he rescues Daniel Radcliffe out of that cage, was like, oh, God, Guy Ritchie. It's Guy Ritchie. And it was totally like a Sherlock Holmes. It was totally like one of the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yep.
Only, in my opinion, better. Now, I will say this. In terms of where this lands on the story, this is a prequel. Because that final scene in the movie, and I'm not going to give anything away. The final scene in the movie sets up the actual story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's this vital organ you know, and Eric, you've seen the movie.
Yes.
There's this vital organ that is completely important to what happens in the actual Frankenstein creation story.
Right.
So I think in Mary Shelley's world, all the crap that happened in this movie never happened. But it's like the prequel. It's like the next thing we do is going to create, we're going to create this monster that you've seen and that you've read in the novels. This
is just kind of like watching That Thing remake prequel.
Yeah, that's exactly. Only this is better, I think.
More boring, actually.
I wasn't really, but it was not as well paced as it could have been. But for me, when McAvoy was on screen, the thing really came to life. No pun intended. As soon as it came out of my, honestly, I didn't mean to Gene. I did not mean to Gene Shalit it. I swear to God.
Yeah.
and who is this girl by Jessica Brown Finley who plays?
Jessica Brown Finley. Yeah.
Man, she's what? Whoa, huh?
Yeah, she was in Winter's Tale, I believe.
Oh boy.
Remember Winter's Tale?
Yeah, I do.
Uh huh.
Yeah, you know what? And that starred my other boyfriend.
Yeah, like, Colin Farrell.
Yeah, Colin Farrell, James McAvoy. I love these guys, man. But boy, yeah. And that's like a weird, like, bastardization of a story too.
Yep.
Okay. Well, anyway. So, and I'm sure that Colin is listening to this, going, "Oh, it was like a Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movie, but with Frankenstein." Yeah, I'll run off to see that.
Yeah. He's already gone. That was the movie, apparently.
Yeah. So, but that's exactly what I thought of, and I was curious, Eric, as to if that's how you felt too. But
yeah. No, it was that whole circus sequence at the beginning. That I wrote a note and I said, "Let's Sherlock Holmes."
Yeah, exactly. You know, all the way, and Colin, you'd love it too because it's got the speeded up, slowed down thing, and.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big fan of that.
Yeah, I know you are.
Wonderful.
All right. So Victor Frankenstein, I liked it a little bit more than Eric. By the way, I saw it with my parents. My dad thought it was the best movie ever made. My dad was like, that was awesome. And I'm like, okay, Dad. He was like mad at me because I didn't like it very much. I was like, yeah, it was all right. He's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, okay, all right. But anyway, I just, my dad represent for Victor Frankenstein.
Sure.
Yeah. So, okay. Hang on. All right. Okay. There's Colin. There's Eric. And we've got more coming up after we take a break here on 720 WGN. And then Eric and I will also talk about the box office right here on 720 WGN. Everybody, it's a Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter joined me, and we are back to review some big ones here coming up. All right, let's get back to this. Colin and Eric,
yep.
Guess what movie I didn't see this weekend?
Good Dinosaur.
That's exactly right. I did not see The Good Dinosaur. So, Colin, tell us about The Good Dinosaur. This is the latest from Pixar.
It is, and tells the story of dinosaurs. In this case, a family of dinosaurs who own a farm where they grow corn and store it away for the winter. There's a mother, father, and three child dinosaurs, and they're all, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Apatosauruses. Anyway, long story
short. We might need to consult a six-year-old.
Okay.
So that's because they're the experts, man.
Well, they would be up listening to us.
Yeah, of course they would. Yeah, it's only 3:30 in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, long story short, Arlo, the youngest dinosaur and the most afraid of things, he's separated from his family after an accident involving his dad, and he has to try and find his way back home. He meets a feral child, I guess that's the best way to describe him, who is more of a dog. And it's eventually determined that the kid's name is Spot. That's how much of a dog he is, even though he's a human boy.
And the two spend, you know, much of the film together, traveling, trying to find their way back home, meeting all sorts of odd characters and having misadventures, which lead to Arlo figuring out, trying to, gaining courage to do things that you would normally be afraid to do. If it sounds like that doesn't, that plot description doesn't sound very original, well, it's not. In fact, there's not really a shred of originality in this whole film. That being said, I still enjoyed it. It is from Pixar, and we, have a level of expectation from Pixar, especially coming on the heels of Inside Out, which I think we all agree is the best animated film of the year, certainly one of the best of this decade. But this is not even close to being on that level of good, but it's not Cars either. It's somewhere, I think it's like I think for me, it's Pixar's first 3-star film. I think the characters are really engaging. The movie does have kind of a wicked sense of humor. Some really unexpected gags come out of it that wasn't expecting. Some very funny characters. Sam Elliott has a character voice in this thing that really fits the look of the dinosaur. It comes at the right time. So I think the movie is engaging and funny and charming and, interesting and certainly beautiful to look at. It's all those things in enough doses to warrant, a recommendation. It's not great. I think I like the Peanuts movie more. If you're trying to flip between the two films, which one to go see, I think the Peanuts movie is a little better, but I still think this movie's, pretty good. It's a recommendation.
Okay. All right. All right, Eric.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot more to add. I mean, if Inside Out was, sort of a masterpiece that was for everyone, The Good Dinosaur is certainly more on the kiddie side. It actually, aside from sort of the photo stuff that looks really amazing in the film, this movie is a little more Saturday morning cartoonish than a lot of the other Pixar films, but it is better than the films we haven't liked. It's better than the Cars movies and Brave and Monsters University. And partly, due to that is, like Colin says, this movie has sort of a little wicked streak in it. Maybe almost gags that almost maybe were put in much later for the adult audiences. This is a film that actually it went through a really sort of interesting production history where they messed around with the story a little bit and they recast a lot of the voices and whatnot. And it would be surprised if some of these things got slipped in a little bit later on to make it a little more adult friendly. But it does. It actually builds to a nice little emotional climax. It's sometimes very funny. It's fine. It's a Pixar movie that's fine. And that's better. It's not Victor Frankenstein, so it's better than that. so what a recommendation. No, it's good. I enjoyed myself.
Having seen all the trailers, read a little bit about it, I kind of had a hunch that was going to be the case. And so that's one of the reasons why I didn't make time to see it this past weekend. I mean, I'll catch up with it. It's a Pixar movie, so I will see it.
Yeah. But it's worth seeing just for the Triceratops sequence.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Now,
and it must be said that one of the things that disappointed me about the film is the look of the main dinosaur characters. A little flat and featureless and very Saturday morning, and I don't think really up to Pixar's standard.
Okay. 3D or not 3D?
Doesn't matter. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't need
it. Pixar doesn't make 3D movies. They just make movies that they have to turn into 3D.
Right.
To appease Disney. But no, Disney, 3D does not matter.
Okay. All right. For those people who are who have not taken their kids to see the Peanuts movie yet, I actually love that movie. Eric, have you caught up with it yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
I did catch up, by the way, with a movie that we didn't review when it came out. I want to mention it very quickly before we break, and that's Trumbo. Has anybody caught up with that yet?
No,
I have not seen it.
Okay. I would not rush. This has kind of been a thing lately with movies where, like, some of these movies that have come out lately, like Legend is a great example. is a movie like Trumbo is a really terrific movie. I mean, a really non-terrific movie filled with terrific performances. You know, Cranston is really good in it. Actually, everybody's really good. And of course, Helen Mirren, you know, she's got like the juicy role. She'll probably get nominated for supporting actress for it. But for me, and I think everybody's really good in the film. John Goodman's really good. Louis C.K., maybe the best work he's ever done. The best work that he's ever done where he's not playing Louis. I think he's really good in it. And I think that Diane Lane rules in this movie. I really think she's great. I don't, however, think that, you know, I've been doing a little reading after I saw it, and I read an article that says that it is insanely, insanely historically inaccurate. To the point where it's almost offensive. Like, I've read stuff where people who knew Dalton Trumbo saw the movie and were like, no, this is not at all what it was like. If you would like to see good actors, you know, doing good things, okay. It's not a terrible movie. I did not get emotionally invested in it. I didn't care about the struggle. I thought the jokes were a little ham-fisted. I think Goodman's character and performance is a little bit over the top, but Goodman can pull it off because he's John Goodman. But yeah, overall, it's not a terrific movie. I would not go out of my way to see it. So you guys have both made the correct decision to have not gone out of your way to see it. But Cranston's great in it. Did you guys see the Actors Studio with him?
No.
It was just on this past week.
Oh.
I would highly recommend it. It's great. It really is great. I mean, they talk a lot. They talk a lot about Trumbo. And of course, you know, Lipton had to go, yes, I worked with Trumbo, you know, and you captured him elegantly. And I'm like, just shut up, man. So there's obviously a lot of talk about Breaking Bad and some really amazing insights into how the scripts would change simply based on Cranston's work.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you're a Breaking Bad fan, you have to see it, and you have to watch it. He's terrific. Cranston rules. He's good in the movie. I wouldn't recommend it, but I do recommend watching the Actor's Studio. But I will tell you this. The one thing I was massively disappointed about in the Actor's Studio, not one mention of Tim Whatley.
That's sacrilege.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they go on and on about Malcolm in the Middle, as they should, because he was awesome on Malcolm in the Middle. But not one mention of Tim Whatley?
Multi-episode character.
Oh my God! He should at least told one of the. He should have told the buoys jokes. Raquel Welch and the. You know, those aren't buoys. Yeah. All right. But anyway, I highly recommend it. If you watch Inside the Actor's Studio, terrific episode with Cranston. Okay, everybody, hang on. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When we come back, we've got the big one that came out this week. Well, actually, the big one was the Good Dinosaur. That's the one that made the most money of the new movies. But when we come back, we're going to talk about Creed, the latest film in the Rocky Balboa saga. That's coming up right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5, and then I'll hang out with Steve Cochran and the gang for a Monday morning hangout session with the Cochran gang. Always a lot of fun. Coming up after 4 o'clock, we are going to talk about the golden age of television. Is it happening right now? And we're going to talk about binge watching and shows that we're going to talk TV. If it's the golden age of television, and maybe when was the golden age of television? You can talk or text us for that commentary after the 4 o'clock news at 312-981-7200. Let's get Eric Childress and Colin Suter back here. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Eric.
Yeah.
Creed, baby.
Okay. Here it comes.
Here we go.
Okay. This is a continuation of the Rocky story, and it stars Michael B. Jordan as Adonis Johnson, who is actually the illegitimate son of Apollo Creed, who, as we meet at the beginning, is basically
sort of in and out of juvenile detention halls and whatnot, and he has a penchant for fighting. He is more or less adopted by Paulo's wife, who in this movie is played by Felicia Rashad. Flash forward years later, and Donna still has the sort of the boxing gene in him. When he's not working at his very sort of well-to-do office job, he is going down to team fighting in underground boxing matches where he's 15-0. So this doesn't really suit well with his mom. He actually quits his job to sort of pursue his dream of being in the ring. And his dream takes him to Philadelphia, where he meets up with Rocky Balboa, Sylvester Stallone himself. He gets him to sort of coaxes him into actually basically sort of coming out of retirement and training him so he can become a boxer and follow in his father's footsteps. But the tricky part of that is that he actually wants to do it, you know, on his own. He doesn't really want the sort of the legacy of to sort of sort of smooth the path, if you will, to him. He really wants to do this on his own, and now he's got Rocky in his corner to help him do that. Probably the last thing the people needed more than another Frankenstein retelling was maybe another Rocky film. We had maybe seen the last of Rocky as he, said his goodbyes out of the ring in Rocky Balboa, which is a really terrific movie, by the way. But he is back. And all I can say is, thank God he's back, because this is actually one of the best movies of the year. I didn't really know that this film was going to impact me as much as it did, and it's really just how well director Ryan Coogler, who did Fruitvale Station with Michael B. Jordan, takes such loving effort in the screenplay. The movie actually reminded me a lot in sort of the structure and the way it's sort of handled, that the same sort of beats that Good Will Hunting actually had. This movie feels a lot like that, about sort of this young prodigy and his mentor and his girlfriend, played by Tessa Thompson in the movie. And this is one of the things that I like so much about the movie, is that none of the varying subplots in the film are half-assed. Everything is really sort of structured really well and developed really well. The performances are, Michael B. Jordan is terrific in the lead role, but not enough can be said about Sylvester Stallone. We have talked in the past with like someone like Hugh Jackman with Wolverine, where someone who's sort of born out of a character and really, even though maybe, played it maybe past its prime, still really puts the effort in. And you can really see that, how much Stallone loves this character. The role that he created 40 years ago and now is continuing on here, he does some of the best work of his career, acting-wise, in this film. I think he's going to be nominated. I think he's actually going to win, too. There's so much to like about this movie. It's over 2 hours long. It doesn't waste a minute of its screen time. I think the boxing matches in the film are exceptionally well done. The first boxing match in this film is going to be replayed multiple times on loops, as far as people wanting to see how to do fight sequences. This is maybe the best film of its kind since maybe Warrior a few years ago. It's got a real emotional investment. It has a fantastic payoff in the end. I was just sort of elated watching this movie, and by the end of it, I just had this great smile on my face, and I really wanted to just tell people about it. Creed, I think it's one of the best movies of the year.
Colin.
Yeah, I think it's really an unexpected surprise. and Stallone, I agree with Eric. It's a really touching, really beautiful performance that he's giving here, and it's unexpectedly it's better than you would think, considering how long he's been playing the role and considering how cartoonish the Rocky series got back in its day. But this is as far as I'm concerned, the third you know, the Rocky movies now have like a nice trilogy within them of Rocky, Rocky Balboa, and Creed. I think those are your three Rocky, essential Rocky movies. Even though Rocky 3 and Rocky 4 have moments that are kind of fun. But as far as telling a rich story, these are the three films. And yeah, you know, and I really also like the stuff with Tessa Thompson, who, you know, I think is also very good in the film. And I like that her stuff isn't just, you know, she's not just the girlfriend in this, you know, she, her role is a lot more significant than that. And I also dig her music. Like, I want to buy her album, you know? So yeah, I think this is a really, you know, one of the year's bigger surprises. You know, that I think I'm glad we'll be hearing more about it through, you know, the beginning of next year when award season rolls in.
I'm with you, Eric, 100%. I think it's one of the best movies of the year, and it blew me away. It blindsided me. I did not expect this movie to be nearly as good as it is, and it's great. It's a great film. I liked Ryan Coogler's last movie. I liked Fruitvale Station a lot, but the technique used in this movie is really kind of nowhere to be found in that film. Like, I mean, leaps and bounds in terms of camera work, in terms of composition. You mentioned that first fight scene. It's insane. It's just, and it's, I just kept waiting for there to be an edit, and I'm sure there are. They're snuck in there. But it is an incredibly, some of the best choreography, fight choreography I've ever seen in a movie. And like, I, you know, the audience just was like, that shot, the, you know, the smash cut at the end of that scene. Where he's sleeping on the couch. There's all the empty ice cream boxes on the table.
Yeah.
Everybody just was like, ah, like we all of us like collectively just went, ah, we can breathe. You know, it's in a magnificent movie. I adored this movie. You know, you mentioned Tessa Thompson. Here's the thing that Ryan Coogler knows about this movie and knows what's important about the first film is that the subplot with Talia Shire was essential, was the core of the movie. And he doesn't back away from that in this movie. There's a beautiful moment in the movie where she is let down by Creed. And he's outside her door, and she's got a hearing aids in her ear. There's a beautiful moment where he's banging on the door very subtly. She does something with her hearing aids that I thought was a beautiful moment that didn't even need any words. The stuff between them was great. Now, beautifully made. I cried three times during the movie. There are wonderful little throwbacks to the original Rocky. This, by the way, one of the best scores of the year. Absolutely one of the best scores of the year. Little notes here and there back to Conti's score. Do you know what I mean? You hear it in there. You can hear it. Little moments in the film, the scene in the original movie where Rocky is training and he's running down the street and everybody starts joining him is topped in this movie with a sequence that I wouldn't dream of giving away that made me cry. The ending of the movie made me cry. There are many moments in this, but there's a subtle moment in the movie where they cut to Rocky making breakfast and he's cooking eggs, and I was really happy. I was really happy that he was actually cooking them. I adored this movie. It's very clear to me that Ryan Coogler loves the very first Rocky movie. If you loved the very first Rocky movie, it means something to you. If there's an emotional connection that you have with this movie pays dividends. Creed pays dividends. And Stallone is going to win and deserves to win the Academy Award. It is a great performance. A great performance. He made me cry a couple of times in the film. I was sitting next to the biggest Rocky fan in the world. Okay, I was sitting next to Mike View watching this movie. And just, well, that was a singular experience in and of its own. Like, sitting next to the biggest Rocky fan. Like, we both walked out of there. We had no idea. We both walked out of there a mess. We were like, oh, my God, in the final scene? Oh, forget
it. It's beautiful. And, you know, I mean, I said that they don't half-ass anything.
No.
They could have easily, when, you know, there's a moment, a subplot in the movie that involves Rocky late in the film.
Yeah.
And they could have just been, you know, a little thing and a little motivation and whatnot. But they actually go through with his struggle.
It is,
and it's essential to what the movie is
absolutely
about.
Absolutely. This is absolutely one of the best movies of the year. One of the biggest surprises, Colin, I totally agree with you. I never expected it to be this good. It's one of my favorite films of the year, and Stallone, God bless him, deserves an Academy Award. And Michael B. Jordan is a force to be reckoned with. And this Ryan Coogler guy has made a statement as to what a good director he is. A great film that everyone should see. All right, we got a break very quickly next week. Eric, what do we got?
Krampus. And Chirac.
And Chirac, right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Colin, thank you, buddy, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right.
All right. See you. Bye-bye.
There you go. There's Erica. There's Colin. He's got to go teach the children, but we're going to take a break after we give you some weather and some traffic. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the box office right here on 720 WGN. Time to talk box office with Eric Childress. We just reviewed all the new movies, it being Monday morning. We also talk about the box office. And Eric Childress writes a piece about the box office that comes you can read about it online at movies.com. It usually shows up by Sunday evening. All right, let's talk about the box office. Number one for the second week in a row is Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. Made $75.7 million, bringing its total up to almost $200 million. Is that on par with the other ones?
Not quite. This one is unlikely to reach $300 million here in the U.S., which would be the first of the series not to do that. But it has made over $440 million worldwide, and it's about $250 million away from reaching the $3 billion mark for the franchise. So they'll be just happy to reach that number.
Okay. Good Dinosaur, $55.5 million. How is that in the world of Pixar?
Not spectacular, actually. I mean, the five-day gross throws off the number a little bit, but it's actually one of the lowest grossing opening weekends for Pixar. I know they keep saying Pixar, 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 but I don't know if people really sort of grasp that. The same people that made Inside Out or whatnot, but it's going to end up probably somewhere around 160, 170 million, which would be one of the two lowest Pixar grosses ever.
What's the lowest?
Bug's Life.
I love that movie.
I know.
Number three, Creed, $42.6 million. How does that compare with how Rocky Balboa did when it came out?
Well, it's more than halfway there already. Rocky Balboa made $70 million. At the box office, opened I think it was Christmas Day. It actually opened.
Okay.
So it kind of a decent soft opening, and then word of mouth built and made $70 million. But this is the film that's going to watch going forward because word of mouth on this thing is going to be stellar.
Yeah.
The Hunger Games is going to drop like a stone next week. Yeah. If the pace of the other two movies are any indication, Hunger Games might do under $20 million next week. And if that's the case, Creed could leapfrog up to number one next week.
I wouldn't be surprised by it, Eric, considering how shockingly good this movie is. I mean, when it was over, I can't even tell you how many people I was like, you have to see it. You have to see it. It is almost as good as the first Rocky. And anybody who adores the first Rocky, it's necessary to see this movie.
This is a film that's going to get people who normally don't go every week to the movies into the movies. I mean, if they've people have either seen the James Bond film or they were already told that the James Bond film wasn't very good. Those same people aren't going to the audience for Hunger Games and whatnot. There's not a lot of choices out there for them right now, and not that Krampus is not going to draw them in next week.
Sure.
But this is a film that. I was talking about on Thanksgiving that I was telling family members, this is the movie you need to go see.
Yep. I saw it the day after Thanksgiving, so I wasn't able to tell everybody on Earth at that point. I'm going to tell you something. The theater that I saw it, Mike and I went to like a 5 o'clock show on Friday, and there wasn't an empty seat in the house. And it was, I have not heard raucous applause at the end of a movie in a really, really long time.
Mm.
But when this movie ended, people applauded and everybody was walking out just like on a cloud.
Yeah.
It's such a great movie. My God, I couldn't believe how good it was.
It's so good.
I know, man. I'm going back again with my folks this weekend, man. It's just, it's so good. All right. Number four, Spectre, $18.1 million, $176 million so far in the world of Bond. Okay.
Yeah, it's surpassed Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace right now. It's not going to get anywhere near Skyfall, but we knew that. And it's made $750 million worldwide already.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no complaints there.
All right. Peanuts movie comes in at number five. Its total is $116 million. That, in my estimation, did just as well or better than I thought it would do.
But it's probably for Fox, unless this thing starts racking up some money internationally, it's going to be kind of a disappointment. For them, I mean, I think it was like a $100 million production. You're probably talking another $50 million in advertising. It's not, I don't think it's opened a lot overseas, but, you know, animated films usually do pretty well, but Peanuts might be one of those sort of uniquely American things that might not translate as much overseas. And right now it's not made much. So it probably needs about another 130, 140 million to make its money back.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, not good. Not a good week for Fox either, since they had Victor Frankenstein.
Victor Frankenstein did Gem and the Holograms type numbers.
It was not counting my parents and myself.
Yeah.
On a Saturday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Two people.
Yeah. Didn't crack the top 10. Yeah. Did 3.2, 3.4 million for 5 days.
And I can't even explain to you how pissed off my mother was that we didn't go see Creed. Because I had the tickets for Victor Frankenstein ahead of time. I always get the tickets ahead of time for when my parents go to the movies. And then I told them how great Creed was. I was like, oh, Creed was awesome. And they're like, why are we going to see this Frankenstein movie?
To put the Victor Frankenstein numbers in perspective, we already just shamed it with mentioning Gem and the Holograms numbers.
Yeah.
But this is actually the worst opening for Fox since 1987.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, man.
And the film I'm referring to is Emilio Estevez's Wisdom.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is the air territory we're talking about. And Wisdom was only on 788 screens.
Oh,
at the time,
man, that's
Victor
terrible.
Frankenstein was on 2700. So to put it in a little more perspective, this is the worst opening that Fox has had on that many screens since The Rocker in 2008.
That's unbelievable, man.
Yeah,
that is unbelievable. Okay,
bad.
Night Before comes in at number six, $24 million. Not making any money.
No, held pretty well this week. So I mean, it's the only comedy really out there. So, you know, people, you know, they're discovering it a little bit, but it's not doing particularly well.
Okay. And before we let you go, Eric, I know that you ended up seeing Brooklyn.
Yes, I did.
Since you didn't see it when Colin and I reviewed it. And you did love it, did you not?
Yeah, I loved it. The first 70 minutes of this movie, I was just in kind of rapture with it. Just slowly evolving rapture. It was like great lovemaking, actually, just watching this movie come about. Saoirse Ronan is terrific. Emery Cohen is not getting enough mention as her boyfriend in the film. I think he's terrific in it. I love Julie Walters in it. Then there's a portion of the film in the second half for about 20, 25 minutes. I don't want to say too much about what happens, but it actually, I was starting to get pulled out of the film a little bit because I didn't like some of the choices that she was making.
Okay.
And I'm always bothered when a movie has a character that all the conflict comes out of not saying the right thing at the right time. And that's kind of what was happening with her in a way.
Okay.
I was sort of bothered. You know, there's a moment where there's a drawer full of something.
Right, right.
And I verbally yelled out expletives.
Yeah.
At her. I was just very angry with her for that.
Okay.
But then the last, like, 20 minutes of the film completely won me back.
Okay.
So, I think Brooklyn is one of the best movies out there right now.
Me too.
And people should absolutely see it.
Me too. Okay. Very, very cool. Okay, so Hunger Games was your number one movie. Good Dinosaur did Creed did great. But as Eric and I are predicting, it's going to do even better next week. And it's got legs. It totally
does. Oh, God,
legs.
It does it.
It's so
will it.
It's so damn good.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks, man. And we've got Chirac, which I think a lot of people locally will have a lot of interest in.
Yeah.
And of course, A Krampus.
Got Krampus. Oh, I thought of a couple other twin movies.
Oh, okay. Real quick.
Actually, one you're going to kick yourself for.
What was that?
One mainly because they're not on screen at the same time, but Paul Dano played twins in a movie.
Oh, he did. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes. And so did Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, Double Impact.
That's right.
That's right. Double Impact rules.
Okay. Yeah. Doesn't rule, but he did play twins.
I would never wear French silk shorts.
There's two of them.
There's two of them. See? Oh, man. Fantastic. All right. Eric, thanks, buddy.
Sure thing.
We'll talk to you next week. Eric Childress, you can read him at efilmcritic.com, rogerebert.com, and his box office analysis every week on my show and at movies.com. All right. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN.
Yeah.
Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. every weekday morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. And I'll be hanging out after 5 o'clock with the Steve Cochran gang. You know, Esmeralda, during the news broadcast when you were doing the weather, you said, you almost said s'more snow showers.
Because it's s'more weather.
And I was going to say, that's when you go out and stick your tongue out to catch the flakes, if they're going to be s'mores.
Oh, if s'mores were falling from
the
sky?
Yeah, I mean, I thought s'mores.
I'd be more worried about the sharp bits of the graham crackers hitting you.
Yeah, but so what? S'mores are good.
Sure. One in the eye.
Sure.
You catch one.
That's all right. For every one that punishes you, you can catch two that will be tasty.
I just put a bucket out. I think that would be easier than to open your
There you go. So when
mouth.
We when we have the s'more showers.
Yeah, a couple days.
Put a bucket outside.
40% chance.
40% chance of s'mores falling from the sky. You remember that episode of the Simpsons? It was a Treehouse of Terror episode where Homer had a time machine. It was a toaster time machine, and he would go to different things in the future. And he would leave, and one of them was, everything was perfect. Like, he showed up, and everything was perfect at home. Like, everything was great with Marge. Everything was cool. And then they're like, ooh, this is great. What about donuts? And they're like, donuts? Marge goes, donuts? What's a donut? And he's like, and he leaves. And after he leaves, he goes to another time. Do you remember what happens?
It starts raining donuts.
Starts raining donuts, and then Marge goes, oh, it's raining again. That's what I was thinking of with s'mores falling out of the sky.
Right. I like that you had to make the voice of Marge.
Well, it was a terrible, by the way. It was a terrible impression of Marge.
I mean, it was okay. It was decent.
No, it wasn't. You don't have to be nice to me, Esmeralda.
All right. Well, starting now.
Okay. All right. Hey, speaking of The Simpsons, see, I'm segueing. In the professional world of broadcasting, you know this, I'm just segued.
You are segued.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? We're going to be talking about TV. Is there too much TV? And is this the golden age of television? Because a lot of people, I read a couple of articles that are stating that this is indeed the golden age of television. And I would like to hear from you. Are we seeing the best television that we've ever seen? 312-981-7200. Talk and text. 312-981-7200 for your thoughts on that. Is there too much TV? Because there are so many different ways you can watch television and see shows. And is it the golden age of television? I want to get to that in a second. But again, one of those stories that I wanted to mention again that you were talking about in the newscast, Esmeralda. If you are a driver, please remember tomorrow night is a big deal if you park on the streets of Chicago. Because the city loves to nail your ass if you drive and you park on the 107 miles of city streets that have the winter parking ban. Please, please, I can't stress this enough as a former bartender. The times I've gone out to get my car after my shift, and it's not there because I forgot about it. December 1st, after midnight, December 1st, which is tomorrow. So, it would be Monday night, late Monday night at midnight begins. So 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., you cannot park on certain streets, over 107 miles of city streets to be precise. They don't want you to know about this, but I do, because I can't tell you the number of times I've had to get my car out of hock. I've had to pay a parking ticket and a fine. It is a major, major pain in the buttocks, let me tell you.
And can I say that the ticket, the car disappearing is frightening.
Yes.
But then having to go to get it and wait hours.
It's
traumatizing.
It is a nightmare. You're absolutely, it happened to you then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and here's I thought my car got stolen.
Yo, me too. But and every damn year it would happen to me. I think it happened to me 3 years, maybe not in a row, but it happened to me 3 years.
Oh, I learned my lesson.
I didn't, because I'm a moron. But here's the thing that people need to know. Mark this down. If you're parking on the city streets Monday night after midnight, which would be Tuesday morning, December 1st, get it off the street. Park it someplace where the parking ban is not in effect. They will tow you. They will laugh about it, and you will pay. And it will not be pleasant. The other thing is, it does not have to be snowing. This is the thing that people think. They think, oh, well, because, you know, there are all those places where it's like you can park if there's less than 2 inches of snow. Do you know those areas? And everybody thinks, oh, well, it's not snowing, so I can park here. You can't. It could be bone dry. And there's s'mores in the forecast at some point, but there is no, there's for tomorrow night, there is no snow in the forecast. Okay, so it is not going to be snowing. And it doesn't matter. You cannot park in those designated areas. Your car will be towed. So please, if you're a driver, as someone who drove for many, many, many years and acquired many tickets of any of many, many different kinds and varieties, which is one of the reasons why I don't drive anymore, this is a very important thing. They will take your car and you will be upset. And like you, Esmeralda, I would walk out after bartending, a long night of bartending, maybe 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd walk around the corner, and I'd go, oh, man. Like, the first time it happened, like, my car was stolen. And I had a piece of crap car. And I'm thinking to myself, who's going to take my 86 Ford Escort? Who wants a beat-up, ugly 86 Ford Escort?
The city of Chicago.
That's exactly right. And they want your money. The ticket is it's a minimum $150 towing fee. A minimum $150 towing fee. A $60 ticket and a storage fee of $20 a day. Don't let that happen to you. Jan, has this ever happened to you?
Not that I can remember, no.
No, you'd remember.
It's happened to my parents. It's happened to my parents.
You'd remember, trust me. Wouldn't he remember, Esmeralda?
No, you would. I can still remember like it was yesterday.
Absolutely. Me too. And every year at this time, I kind of go out of my way. I know I sound like a lunatic right now, but trust me, if you've not gone through this, you don't understand how traumatizing on your psyche, on your time, on your sleep, and on your pocketbook it is. And it all happens at the same time. All of those traumatic avenues that can happen all coincide to smash you right in the face. It is. So please listen to me on this one. And pay attention throughout the winter. Do not park in those areas. But the slap in the face comes when it's not snowing. You forget that it's in effect, and you go out and your car is gone. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
No, the slap in the face is when you go to get your car, it's cash only.
Yeah.
So hey, go find the closest debit or cash station available.
Yeah.
That you know, and then you're going to get jacked another $5 for a cash station.
Well, that's the other thing. There's another thing, and you're absolutely right. It's cash only, and I didn't bring enough cash. Well, here's our ATM, and here's a $5 charge on the ATM.
No, wait. This is the best part, because I do HVAC, so I drive a van.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh.
There's an extra additional charge for a vehicle that's over. Yeah. A certain tonnage.
So I'm not going overboard in warning people, right, Patrick?
They got me on 4th of July, actually the 2nd of July,
yeah,
on Ohio.
Yeah.
Maybe going, whatever goes to the Navy Pier. And I had a customer at 100 East, whatever it was.
Yeah. It wasn't snowing in July. I just want to talk. I'm talking about the parking van during the winter. Patrick, thank you, buddy. But I understand that any time of the year, it sucks to get your car towed and to get it out of hock and all of that stuff. It sucks. But let me tell you something. You don't think about this, you know, because the ban doesn't come into effect until, you know, it stops in April. Okay, so you don't think about it like all summer, all fall. It's the farthest thing from your mind until you walk outside on Tuesday morning at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning, and your car is not there. It's very unpleasant. Okay, all right, we have to break for weather, for traffic. We'll come back and we'll talk about the golden age of television, which could be right now. I just wanted to warn you drivers out there. Okay, please take a look at the street signs. It doesn't matter if it's snowing, and don't park your car where it shouldn't be parked because it just sucks. Yeah. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on a Monday morning, which means in just a little while, about a half an hour from now, my dad will be calling in to tell a joke. Every Monday morning, my dad, Nick, calls in, to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. So you'll hear that memorable jingle and hear my dad's joke, which is joke this morning is joke number 99 for my father. So next week, we got to do something special. Next Monday morning, it will be my dad's 100th joke on the show. Joke number 100 next week, so we'll do something special for that. But it's always special when my dad calls in. He'll tell the joke a little bit later on. Right now, we're talking about TV. Is this indeed the golden age of television? There have been articles that say so. And a lot of TV out there. Is there too much TV? Now, in my opinion, there's never too much TV. There can never be too much TV. Oh, I don't think so. So I'm pretty cool with what's going on television. Now, Yun, do you watch a lot of TV?
If you count, like, Netflix and such.
Yeah, Netflix is...
Okay,
yeah.
Then I would say I watch a good amount. I've been watching a lot of things on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure out what I like, which is probably the hardest part, because you don't know if the episode's going to be good or not yet. You know?
Uh-huh. So but, what are you currently enjoying?
Okay, so, and this is very hard to do because I don't have Stars, but I'm a huge Evil Dead fan. So they've got Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Yes, they
oh,
do.
Oh, my goodness. That's such a great... And you know what? They continue... It's like a continuation of the plot. Of course, Ash is older now and everything like that.
Yeah.
But he's the same old...
Now, have you watched all the episodes?
I haven't watched all of them. They're still, like, being released.
Well, yeah, I've watched them all.
You have?
Oh yeah. Been, okay. Oh, I subscribe to Stars just because of Ash versus Evil Dead. I happen to be a massive Evil Dead fan. And I love the show. I love it. And
it's
it was
so
episode number 4, I believe, just this past Saturday. Maybe number 5. Number 5, maybe. Now, Esmeralda actually went to school with the hottie. In the show.
I did.
With the girl who plays Kelly.
I had one class with her.
I thought you were going to say Bruce Campbell.
No, she's...
Yeah, I'm that old.
She's not 60. No, but I always... Why am I forgetting her name? What's her name?
Dana Dillard something. Or
good, thank you. I know that you know
your... I didn't know her.
You knew her. You were best friends with her, you told me. You organized her wedding shower, even though she's not married.
How do you know that?
I don't know. I looked her up online.
Oh, boy.
After I saw the first episode. She was just in town, by the way.
For Thanksgiving?
She didn't look you up?
No. I don't think if we ever even cross paths again.
She was in
she
town. I don't know if she was in town for Thanksgiving, but there was a horror convention called Days of the Dead.
Oh, and she was here.
And she
okay.
was here. Yeah,
that's
to sign
cool.
autographs and stuff. And I had some friends who went and said she was awesome.
Yeah, no, I remember her being a very cool person.
And that she posed for a lot of really goofy pictures. Like people,
she
you know,
seems
like
the type.
Now, have you caught up with it? Are you? Because I know you watched a little bit of it.
I know. I'm actually, yeah.
You're all caught up.
Because today was the 5th episode?
Yeah. The last episode is a great one for her because she gets all possessed and stuff.
Yes, I'm at that point.
All right, so you saw that.
Yeah, where Ash is going through the thing.
Where what?
He's going through his trip.
No. Okay, that was last week.
Okay, well, that's last week.
Now, I haven't
gotten to see them.
She's all possessed. They think Ash is, so they tie him up and gag him.
Oh, okay.
And then they start doing, like, an exorcism on Ash. The shaman dude starts doing an exorcism on Ash. Meanwhile, Kelly's all possessed. She's got Pablo in Ash's trailer trying to convince him to blow weed and trying to seduce him.
Because that's going to be real hard for him.
No, that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing. But, like, she's trying to convince him to blow weed through the... Because they can't find a pipe or anything.
Right.
So she's trying to convince him to blow weed through the barrel of a shotgun, which she's going to load up because she's possessed by a devil.
Because that sounds...
She's going to load up and blow the back of his head off.
And he's a real dummy and he would do it.
Of course. And look at her. I'd do it. So, but then she gets all possessed, and they discover that she's all possessed, and they have to do, like, the 15 minutes, half of the episode,
mm-hmm.
is her having the demon exorcised out of her.
Oh, boy.
Oh, she gets to puke all over the place.
Oh,
it's fantastic.
I am bummed that they're only half hours.
I know. I agree with you.
Because I feel like it just gets started, and then
yeah.
it ends.
But I'm telling you, you'd love it, man. I know the first one, everybody loved the first one because
yeah.
Sam Raimi came back
no,
and directed
it. It's all been really good.
It's all been good. It's absolutely hilariously entertaining. And Esmeralda, I couldn't agree with you more. The only complaint that I have, and it's a good complaint, is that it's too short.
I would agree. I'm such a huge fan of the whole series.
Yeah.
Army of Darkness, by the way, is like a movie that I have to watch once, at least once every single year.
Yeah.
So.
One of my claims to fame is I am quoted on the poster of Army of Darkness.
What, Hail to the King, baby?
No. I'm quote one of the, as a movie critic. One of my quotes is on the is on that. I made the poster for Army of Darkness.
Oh,
I was very proud of that. But yeah, so that's a good binge watcher. I just watched that. In fact, I watched that the latest episode yesterday, which I thought was great. Now, Esmeralda, you just finished watching Master of None, right, on Netflix?
Yes.
With Aziz Ansari.
Yes.
And my future ex-wife, Noelle Wells,
mm-hmm.
Who I love. And I loved her. For people who don't remember her on SNL, and nobody really remembers her on SNL except for me, because she is my future ex-wife, damn it. She was great on SNL and lasted just like a season, and nobody really remembers, but she was great. And now she is like the female lead on Masters of None with Aziz Ansari, which everybody remembers. He remember Aziz Ansari mostly from Parks and Rec, because he was just great on that.
Yes.
Now, you love the show. I still haven't seen it, and I've got the Netflix. So I don't know why I'm waiting. I still haven't seen it.
It's really good. I can relate to it a lot, and I want to be Aziz Ansari's best friend.
Don't you?
Yes. I want to live in his world, which I think is a real world, so
it is
a possibility.
Yeah, it is. Now, speaking of women who were great on SNL, Noelle Wells, by the way, now on Masters of None, but Nasim Pedrad, who is also my future ex-wife, I don't know if these women know this or not, but they are. Nasim Pedrad, who is now fully kicking major ass on Scream Queens, was great on SNL. Was a phenomenal performer on SNL. Was on for, I think, 5-6 seasons. And Esmeralda, you remember from SNL, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever see her do her Aziz Ansari?
I saw the outtake. I forget where she was or whatever, but it was.
I think she was on Conan, because Conan.
Pretty convincing.
I think it was on Conan. You know why? Because every time Conan has her on, he's like, "Please, let's show the Aziz Ansari clip." Just every time she's on, they show it. And if you haven't seen it, it's pretty great. She looks just like him. Like, they put the makeup on her, she looks exactly like Aziz Ansari. And Master of None, which I hear a lot about, I believe the last time I talked about binge watching television, which is the thing that everybody's doing now, the most show that got the most responses that people say that they binge watch the most, without question, was Breaking Bad. That was the one that everybody was like, Breaking Bad. Like, I asked for text and phone calls. Between the text and the phone calls, I would say the majority of titles that came up were Breaking Bad. Now, where do you land on the Breaking Bad, Esmeralda?
I've seen episodes.
Yeah.
But I was not so into it that I needed to watch it. I would watch an episode and be like, yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a thing where I needed to keep watching.
Yeah. I really like Breaking Bad. I'm not on the it's the greatest television show of all time, I had to watch 87 episodes in a row kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I'm
most people are that. You and I are in the minority, though, because most people lost their mind over Breaking Bad.
Oh, no, people think I'm insane.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. I've seen it all. I watched I watched every episode. I've seen the finale. I watched it all. Like it very much. Cranston is amazing. The acting is great. I thought it was a very, very good show. It was not the kind of show that I would go, oh, my God, you got to see it. It's the greatest. I can't stop watching it. For me, that's The Wire. That's all. For me, the most addictive and the greatest television show in the history of the medium is The Wire. And I still can't believe that you haven't sat down and watched it.
I'm telling you, I can't. And especially with everything going on now.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to happen because I feel so awful. Because I know these things are real in some place.
I know, but that's the thing.
And it just makes me feel like 10 times worse watching it.
We got a break here, but I just want to say this. Your concern and complaint about it is that it is depressing and it's very realistic. And that's legit. That's totally legit. It's also the best television show that's ever graced the television
screen. I'm sure it was, but, you know, after watching a second episode, all I could just is sigh heavily and just... Oh, gosh.
I know. It's a little heavy, but, man, it's good. Okay, we got a break. We got the news coming up, and then we'll talk more about the golden age of TV. Is it now? What TV shows do you binge watch and all that cool stuff? Real quick break. News next. Good morning, everybody. Yeah. Monday morning. Welcome back, everybody, after a long weekend. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. And my producer, Dan Chagrou, is off. He'll be off again tomorrow morning. He'll be back Wednesday morning. And Tuesday morning, we'll be back again for a full show from 2 to 5 a.m. We're going to be talking with a guy who has created Star Trek fan fiction. And I know Esmeralda is going to be off tomorrow morning. And so filling in for her will be Roger Badish. And Roger Badish is a Star Trek geek. So Roger will be very excited about our guest tomorrow morning. After 2:15, we'll have a guy who is responsible for actually filming Star Trek fan fiction that continues the Star Trek saga. And evidently does it very, very well. And his videos are available out there on the internet. And we'll talk to him. He'll be with us tomorrow night. So we got a lot of lot more stuff coming up tomorrow morning. Dan Chagrou will again be taking the morning off. He'll be back Wednesday morning. Tomorrow morning producing. Tuesday morning will be Dan Long, my my producer that I used to work with on Saturday nights. So he'll be here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. By the way, I would love it if you all came out, brought your family, brought your friends to come and see Jerry Lewis's masterpiece, The Nutty Professor, on the big screen in all its Technicolor glory. One night only, Tuesday, tomorrow night, at the Movieco Theater in Rosemont. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. Meet at 7 o'clock at Bogart's, which is the restaurant on the second floor of the Movieco Theater in Rosemont. And at Bogart's, have something to eat at 7 o'clock, and then at 8 o'clock we'll all go in and sit in the beautiful Premiere Theater with unbelievable plush seats. You can have cocktails during the movie. I'll introduce Jerry Lewis's The Nutty Professor, which is one of the funniest movies ever made, and a classic comedy. And then afterwards, we have a little film talk, a Q&A, and all that cool stuff. We are celebrating the fourth anniversary of the Nick D Film Club, which happens every first Tuesday of each month at the beautiful Movieco Theater in Rosemont. I want to thank the people at Movieco for hosting this event that we've been doing now for 4 years. So our fourth anniversary is tomorrow night, and it'll be our 50th movie. So movie number 50, one of my favorites, is Jerry Lewis and The Nutty Professor, and so we're going to be doing that one. So it's $10 to get in, and it's only the parking is free, and so yeah. So The Nutty Professor will be tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Movieco Theater. So you can check out Movieco.com to reserve your seats. Please reserve your seats. Come on out, bring the kids. It's a big family movie. Jerry Lewis is one of my favorites, one of my idols, and one of the comedic greats of all time. So there you go. Nutty Professor, tomorrow night, Movieco Theater in Rosemont. 7 o'clock for drinks and food. 8 o'clock, the movie starts. $10 to get in, parking free. And so come on out, Movieco.com. Reserve your seats now, and we'll see you all tomorrow night. Let's pack the place. 50th movie, fourth anniversary of the film club. And so there you go. Alrighty then. Hey, Esmeralda.
Yes.
You, what are the other shows that you have binge watched?
I just finished watching Difficult People.
Oh yeah. Now this is with the Billy Eichner.
Yes.
Who was also on Parks and Rec.
Was he?
Yeah.
He had like a small part.
He had a small role on Parks and Rec. He screamed a lot, which he does.
Which he does. And I love it. I also want to be his best friend.
Do you watch Billy on the Street?
No, and I'm going to now because of Difficult People.
What's Difficult People about?
It's him and...
And what channel is it on? What is it on?
I don't know.
The Amazon? Yeah, that's right. You rip everything off, don't you?
What?
No.
I don't do such things.
No! Whatever. It's on something. It's on one
it's
of the
on
networks.
Something. You find it. Difficult People.
Okay. All right, so what's it about?
So he's a comedian, and then his friend is... she's a writer... comedian. They're just trying to make it.
Do you know
I have no idea.
Is her name Liz Kukowski?
I don't know.
Not Liz Kukowski. Okay.
I don't know.
Because Liz Kukowski is from Chicago, and I knew her when she was with a children's theater company called Barrel of Monkeys.
Oh, okay.
That my ex-girlfriend was the artistic director of, so I met Liz.
Okay.
And Liz Kukowski is genius funny, like brilliantly funny. And she ended up becoming a writer on SNL. She had a few small roles, and then she was out of SNL. She has a very, very small role in, what's that movie where Jason Segel is walking around with his dong hanging out the entire movie?
I Love You, Man?
No, it's not I Love You, Man. The other one, Kristen Bell breaks his heart. and he goes off to Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the only way to describe it is that it's him walking around. So she's in that. She plays Bill Hader's wife in it.
I don't remember.
On the they do like a Skype, a telephone thing, and she's like the girl, the wife who comes in.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, that's Liz Kukowski. She's like really good friends with Eichner.
I don't think it's her.
Okay. She's by the way, married to one of the Lonely Island dudes who's not Andy Samberg.
Oh.
I don't know which one. I don't know which guy.
I would be really mean, but like that one with the name like.
Yeah.
Kiftikabob.
Whatever his name. I don't know. It's not Andy Samberg, but she's married to one of the Lonely Island dudes. Anyway, she's great. So Billy Eichner plays a comedian, and they want to be successful.
Yeah, they want to be, but they're really awful people, and I can very much relate to them. They just hate people.
Okay,
it's great.
Well,
they're really fun.
Have got to see Billy on the street.
Yes, I saw one little clip. He was doing a Thanksgiving parade.
It's hilarious.
And did you see that? Where
Here's the Maggie. Mark. Here's the Maggie Gyllenhaal float. Oh, I love Billy Eichner. I think Billy Eichner's so great. Good. And I still haven't watched that. I got to watch Difficult People. But you could see a ton of the Billy on the Street stuff because it was on Funny or Die.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see a ton of it on YouTube and online.
Yeah.
But the show itself now is on True TV.
Yes.
And it's on Thursday nights on True TV at 9:30. And it is without question the funniest thing on television right now. I mean, I'm literally crying with laughter every time I watch it. He did this thing where he was... For those of you who don't know, Billy Eichner is this lunatic comedian and a great writer and a very funny performer. He runs around on the street with a microphone and basically just like assaults people. You know, he doesn't assault them, but he scares the hell out of them and yells at them and stuff. And he does these quizzes, like game show thing, where he runs around on the street, gives people money if they can answer these questions. He's not very subtle about it. He screams a lot, but he's hilarious. And he did this one bit where he was dressed up like Mark Twain.
Okay.
And he was talking about how Eddie Murphy is receiving the Mark Twain Award for comedy this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got this girl, this young girl. She's like 19, 18, 19 years old. And he's like, okay, I'm going to give you a quote. And he's screaming, you know, into the microphone as he always says, I'm going to give you a quote. You have to tell me if it's Eddie Murphy or Mark Twain. And I can't even remotely do it justice, but it was this unbelievably brilliant way of exposing early on in Eddie Murphy's career, in his stand-up and stuff, how incredibly misogynistic and homophobic he is.
Mm-hmm.
So he would do these incredibly horrible homophobic and racist comments and say, okay, who is that? Is that Eddie Murphy or Mark Twain? And she sometimes would go, Mark Twain? He'd go, no! And like scream at her. And then he'd do these beautiful, poetic, comedic quotes that are clearly from Mark Twain. And then she would have to answer who it was. And within this bit, he exposed... first of all, he thinks it's horrible that Eddie Murphy is getting this award. So in this bit, which on itself is a very funny setup, and he's very funny in it, and the girl that he chooses to interview is also hysterical. Within that bit, it's some of the funniest social commentary I've seen about comedy in a long time. And you have to see it. This Thursday night it's on, and Julianne Moore is the guest. And the first thing he says to her, and I haven't seen it, but they showed the coming attractions.
Mm-hmm.
First thing he says to her, he kind of lists off her credits, and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Julianne Moore! He goes, what the hell are you doing on this show, is the first thing he says to Julianne Moore. It's fantastic. If I could watch 24 hours of that, of Billy on the Street.
I just want to be his, can we just be friends with
him? Oh, I would love to be friends
with
him.
Figure that out?
I know Liz. I think I can call Liz.
Make it happen.
He made a crack on the show where he's like, he's like, okay, and you saw this, because if you saw the Thanksgiving float bit, he said, what? This is Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh, no.
Maggie Gyllenhaal, whose sister, whose brother is Jake Gyllenhaal, who blanked my best friend, Liz.
That is amazing.
Now, immediately, amazing. I wanted, because I don't have Liz's current number, because of course, she's rich now, and she lives with one of the Lonely Island guys.
Right.
I
bet she wants that phone
but
call.
But I want to call her and go, but she knows me. Like, I could say, hey, you remember me from Chicago, and she would know who I am. I'd call her up and go, did you really screw Jake Gyllenhaal? And then immediately, I'd say, when? Because I knew you when Donnie Darko was out, so come on.
We just exposed her.
No, he did, on his show.
Yeah, unless they know her. No one's going to think, oh, all right, yeah,
okay,
Liz.
All right, wait. Well, let me say this. I'm assuming that's the Liz that he meant.
Okay.
I'm assuming because they were best friends. Right. I'm assuming that that's... No, you're right, Esmeralda. Wow. Allegedly. Did I use the word allegedly, didn't I?
Yeah.
I did, didn't I?
You can edit that in. Right?
Allegedly. Allegedly. Like Esmeralda allegedly steals cable.
I don't steal it.
No, I know. I know.
That's so old school.
It is,
like,
yeah.
I have one of those boxes that steals the cable.
The Russian cable guys from the Seinfeld episode came in and hooked up my 1987 right. TV.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, anyway, we have this article that we can post on our Facebook page, which is about the golden age of television. Is it now? I think TV is great now. I do. And there's a lot of it, and then a lot of it is really good. And then there's Two Broke Girls.
I mean, you could say, and then there's Two and a Half. Oh, wait, no, that's gone now.
That's gone. Two Broke Girls is still on.
How about Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory, yeah. Ugh. That's a piece of crap, too.
Ugh.
Yeah. But it's, of course, the highest rated show on television. So what do we know?
Yeah, we're morons. I think it's going to rain s'mores later. So.
That's exactly right. All right, Esmeralda. I'm going to miss you tomorrow, pal.
I'll be back.
You'll be back. I'll see you Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
You and Dan will be back at the same time. It'll be like a treat for me.
Oh, there you go.
Because you're both going to be gone tomorrow.
And if you want, I will get you a cardboard cutout of me.
Can you get a cardboard cutout of Dan?
Stands there. Yeah.
And I can have, at least my producer tomorrow will be named Dan.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So it won't be
No offense to Yun. Yun, you've done a great job. Yun worked his ass off this morning.
Thank you.
He did. He worked very hard this morning. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. All right, we have to break, aren't we? What?
Yep, we're there.
What are you looking at me for? Like, I know.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go. With your music intro.
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yeah. What'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yeah, you get to hear that theme every Monday morning. Thank you to Jason Skaggs for composing that. He composed that in like 2 hours, if I remember correctly. One of the catchiest tunes. My dad, Nick's been telling jokes his whole life, and we thought it'd be a fun idea to kick off your work week, to kick off your Monday morning, get you out of bed with a laugh. My dad tells a joke, and here's my dad. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right, man. How are you?
Doing fine.
How's Ma?
Good.
All right, cool, Dad. This is joke number 199, and we're going to think of something.
Number 99.
Number 99, right, sorry. No, we'll think of something to do next week. Dan and I will put our brains together and think of something special to do for joke number 100, which is next week.
Yes, unbelievable.
And isn't incredible. All right.
And they're all clean.
They're all clean. Yeah, I didn't even know that there were 100 clean jokes. I wasn't even aware of that. All right, so here's joke number 99.
Go. Okay, it's all right. Patrick texts his wife, Molly. He said, Molly, I stopped at the pub with my friend to have a pint. I'll be home in 20 minutes. If I'm not, read again.
I can't tell you the number of times I've called my ex-wives with that one, Dad. all right, Dad, that's a great one.
All right, Nick.
I'll talk to you soon, and next week, joke number 100.
All right.
All right, buddy. Thanks very much. There you go. There's my dad telling a joke. Hey, if I'm not home, just read this again.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
That's right. Yeah. God, I can't believe it'll be 100 jokes next week. That's really something. Yun, have you ever heard my dad's jokes before? I know you're not up this early.
I haven't. That was the first time.
First one. Not bad, huh?
Not bad at all.
Texas girlfriend had texted, hey, I'm going to be late. And if I don't show up in 20 minutes, read this again. See, that gives him an endless amount of 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm stealing that one.
Steal it. Steal away. For those people who were just waking up, introduce yourself one more time. You did a great job this morning.
Thank you, sir.
And introduce yourself one more time. Oh, I think Orion is talking to him. 57, Orion. We're doing a little behind the scenes here. So, okay. Are we good? All right. Anyway, Orion is coming in at some point. And Okay. Okay. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we've got Orion, who is going to be coming in at any minute to do your weather and to do your full weather forecast coming up in just one second. I'm not really sure what's happening right now, but we'll get Orion in here. Steve Cochran is back this morning with a full with the full crew and all that cool stuff. Yon, tell everybody what show you produce.
I produce the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, and you can hear it from 12 to 1.
Okay, cool. And that's when people can hear Steve Bertrand.
That's when people can hear Steve.
Yeah, you gotta work with him every day.
Yeah.
Oh man.
No, Steve's a great guy. Steve's a great guy.
Yeah, sure. I've known him for like 30 years, so it's
That must be tough.
I know the truth. Okay. here's Orion right now. Big O, welcome back in live in studio. How was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was very nice. We enjoyed it in the desert and lots of sunshine and turkey and dressing, and it was very nice.
What else could you want?
Spent it with good friends and enjoyed it.
And well,
I think it's good to be back, but when I stepped out this morning and felt the temperature, I said, maybe I should go west
again. It is a little chilly out there right now, but from what I understand, I was looking at like an extended forecast. We're going to be like in the upper 50s by next weekend.
Yes.
That's craziness.
Our TV forecaster, Greg Solier, is saying we will have a warmer, wetter beginning to the winter, so... we'll keep an eye on that. This morning, it's wet in areas just to the west of us, out to the river. We're showing radar with precipitation, mostly in the form of rain. And the only map we have that doesn't show precipitation yet is South Bend, Indiana, still dry across the lake. But a quick look at what's going on around the Midwest this morning. The story for the Quad Cities this morning, the temperature, wait a minute, we got Champaign, South Bend. Okay, here we go with the Quad Cities. And 37 degrees there this morning. Rain likely overnight. Rain 80% chance today, 70% chance tonight. Tomorrow, a slight chance of snow, and then on Wednesday, it'll become partly sunny, and by Thursday, it'll be sunny in the Quad Cities, where it's 37 at the moment. And the story for Madison, Wisconsin this morning, 34 degrees, and a chance of rain, and throughout the day, with a 70% chance and a high of 40 degrees. Tonight, rain. Tomorrow, chance of rain and snow in the Madison area and a high of 36. And then on Wednesday, a slight chance of snow showers and then becoming mostly cloudy with a high of 37. Finally, on Thursday, sunshine returns to the Madison area, and we're showing precipitation in that area as well this morning. Now, the story for Champaign this morning. There, we're looking at skies that are partly cloudy, 36 degrees, and pretty much the same forecast, although they will get some sunshine tomorrow and on Wednesday. So that's a quick look at weather, and we'll cover numbers throughout the morning, Nick.
All right, Big O, looking forward to it. Break right here. News is next. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back Tuesday morning tomorrow at 2 a.m. Please tune in.